Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go. Let's go.
Welcome into the Playbook for a Wednesday here on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook. PFW's Eric Scalavino is here in the opening hour, as he always is, on Wednesdays. And in hour number two of the program today, we're going to visit for a little bit with Field Yates from ESPN Boston, a young man who just started covering the Patriots for ESPN Boston. And if you've gone on the website, you've probably seen his photo, you've seen his picture, you've seen his byline, some of his work, and he's going to share some of his thoughts on the Patriots as we head into the second half of the 2012 football season. So that's coming up in hour number two today. And I know already Kevin's been working hard. We have a jam action-packed show for Thursday here in the Playbook as well. We'll get into a couple of Buffalo writers, and we'll have Russell Baxter in tomorrow, and so all that's coming up on Thursday's show. But Field Yates will join us in hour number two. I wanted to start off today, though, with a little about how what we were just into the conversation on, and for those of you that are uninitiated, I'm really gonna try not to go overboard here with this, but Coach Darryl Royal, who passed away earlier today at age 88, for those that aren't aware of who he is, you can see his obit and a lot of the stories that are being written about him on ESPN and probably on CBS Sports and your favorite websites of choice. Just Google it. You'll find it today.
ESPN's doing a feature right now.
Yeah, they're doing one right on him. Yeah, absolutely, and as well they should. Coach Royal, as I told Paul and the guys a couple of moments ago, tremendous influence on my life, not only professionally, but personally. Certainly professionally because, you know, growing up, as my entire family went to the University of Texas, Strippers knows this well, being the OU suck-up that he is, that, you know, Darryl Royal was an Oklahoman, first and foremost.
Really?
He grew up in Oklahoma. He was a star quarterback, defensive back, and punt returner for the Oklahoma Sooners.
Really?
In the late 1940s.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So
how did he reconcile getting his...
well, I don't think the rivalry was quite as bad then as it became, certainly in the late 50s and 60s. Bud Wilkinson, the late, great Bud Wilkinson, who's one of the best college football coaches of all time. And some of you that are old enough, if you're my vintage or a little short of my vintage, you'll remember Bud Wilkinson as a college football analyst, one of the first great college football analysts on ABC television back in the late 60s and early 1970s, before Frank Broyles, who we were talking about a little while ago, took over that spot with Keith Jackson. But Bud Wilkinson and Chris Schenkel were the ABC college football team back in the late 60s and early 70s that everybody went gaga over at the time. But Bud Wilkinson was Darryl Royal's college coach at OU. And Royal's final game in Oklahoma was the 1950 Sugar Bowl for Oklahoma. And then he coached a little in high school. I think he had like 7 jobs in 8 years. I mean, different places. Until he started out at Mississippi State. And he went Mississippi State to Washington, University of Washington, and then after he got to the University of Washington for a year, in 1956, he got the call from University of Texas. Replaced a guy by the name of Ed Price, who went 1-9, and obviously, even back then, 1-9 at a place like UT was not going to cut it. Hmm. And so he started at University of Texas in 1957, stayed there through 1976. So he was there for 20 years. Coach Royal... I don't really even know where to start, so I'm not going to try to jump into a couple of things here. If you want to get into his background and all that kind of stuff, I would suggest to Google or go to your favorite sports website and you'll see it. And like I said, they're showing his thing right there. That's probably me and the band right there spelling out Royal on
the
field.
You were in the band?
Oh, yes.
Playing what?
Baritone horn.
Oh, yeah?
4-year letterman in the Longhorn band, yes. I was.
How did I never know that?
I don't know.
You never talked about that.
I don't share a lot of my band geekness with people.
Why the hell not?
Different day and age for me.
Wow, whole lifetime ago, huh?
It was a whole lifetime ago. I was also drum major of my high school band.
How about that?
So, I mean, you know, it's just, I did that. It was my way to get into the football games for free. I was too small to play the sport.
Yeah.
Most of my friends were football players in high school and junior high, and I wasn't big enough. I hadn't figured out that maybe I should be a kicker because I was kind of that ilk,
yeah.
You know, smallish in size. Loved the sport, always loved the sport. I played, you know, in elementary and in junior high school, right up into and through eighth grade, and then that's when the kids started getting bigger, and I discovered that I had actually had a jump shot, and I decided to live and die with that for a while rather than get the crap beat out of me. But always loved football, and Coach Royal was a huge influence on me for a couple of reasons. Number one, I was 11, yeah, I think I was 11 years old, 1970, Texas TCU, Amon G. Carter Stadium, Fort Worth, Texas. Texas hugely favored. They beat TCU 69-7 the previous year. Texas is coming down the ramp near the end zone that I was sitting at, Amon G. Carter Stadium. I'm reaching over to try to pat the players on the shoulder pads, you know, mm-hmm. how kids
sure.
do
yeah,
that
yeah,
all the time, right?
Over, yeah.
So I'm patting, you know, players on the shoulder, and I told a little bit of this story yesterday, E. Mm-hmm. I said I tried to get Jim Bertelsen's chin strap. He gave it to me. He's walking down onto the field. He gave me his chin strap. And I'm sitting there, and I'm looking at the chin strap. I have it in my hand. It's Jim Bertelsen's chin strap. The game hadn't even started yet, and I got the guy's chin strap. Usually that's the kind of thing you get after the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, he gave it to me before the game. You talk about making a lasting impression on a kid. It did. And so I'm sitting there, I'm looking at this chin strap, and my eyes are bugging. I had a couple of friends of mine who were with me, one of whom I'm still very close to. He actually emailed me this morning, and he said, hey, did you hear Coach Royal died? And he's with me, and he's like, oh, Rook, you lucky bleepity bleep. You know, we're 11 years old, and we're cursing like sailors.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Coach Royal, this hand reaches in through the railing, pats me on the back of the leg, and I look up. It's Coach Royal. And he sees me stand there with a chin strap. He goes, you scored, huh? And I was kind of, and he goes, hey, thanks for coming out and supporting the Longhorns today. We always appreciate it.
Pre-game. Wow.
Pre-game. They ended up winning like 58-0 that day, but I have been influenced
by that.
You still
have the chin strap?
Somewhere. Somewhere. I kept it for the longest time, and then, of course, when my mom passed, my dad went through an estate sale, and it's probably somewhere in stuff that got boxed up. But I know that I had that chin strap for a long time, and I remember thinking at one time, going through some old stuff, I remember thinking, what the hell is this? It's a chin strap. I forgot. It was Jim Bertelsen's chin strap off his Texas helmet. But that moment that Coach Royal basically spent with me, oblivious to the 45,000 other fans that were there at Amon G. Carter Stadium that day, meant the world. And I have carried that with me to this day. And this is why I take great pains to watch how players react when they sign autographs for fans and when they interact with fans, because I remember what it was like to have that courtesy done me as a young, impressionable 11-year-old child. And it is something that I have kept with me forever and will keep with me forever. And so I don't care how bad a day I've had. I don't care how much of a bother it may be. If someone asks me for a moment or for an autograph or something like that, I always answer the request. And I always will answer the request, no matter how bad it's been, because of the way I felt that day. Mm. So that's impression number one. And impression number two came from my relationship with several of his former players, one of which was a roommate of mine for a number of years. I told you about him, Billy Schott, who was also a conference kicker back in the mid-70s for the Longhorns. And Billy always told me that Coach Royal treated his players as his own children, as his sons. See, people don't remember that his son David died in a motorcycle accident in 82. His daughter Marion died in an accident in 1973 while he was still an active Texas coach. And Coach Royal really internalized that and never really let on about that. And I always thought that was the bravest thing I had ever seen or heard in my life, because I can only imagine what people go through when they lose a child before they go. You see, we're not supposed to, our children are not supposed to go before us, and everybody knows that. And if you know someone, or if, God bless you, if you are someone that has lost a child before you, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And I always thought, I had such admiration for that man, because of just the front that he put up, and that he always treated his players as his sons.
You think that was part of the reason?
Part of it, I think. Yeah, because I think he always did say, and
the
you can go back.
That was missing.
Yeah, he always did say, you could go back and read this, because there's a couple of books that have been written about Coach Royal. But he said that he softened a little bit after his daughter died in 1973. And he began, if he didn't then, he began really to pay more attention to his players as his children. Now, you remember the Meat on the Hoof book that was written? You may have even seen it. It was late 1960s by a disgruntled Texas player who was basically a scrub on the bench, and he felt like Texas forced him out, and they had to run really, painstaking, grueling drills to force kids out of their scholarships so they could, offer it to somebody else. That was the argument in the book, Meat on the Hoof, if you ever see the book. There might have been, I will allow that there might have been some truth. I don't think it was to take his scholarship up. I think it was just to basically teach players, and this is what my roommate said, teach players how to overcome adversity and get them to bond together as one in order to overcome adversity. And I think that's hugely important in the overall teaching process. Coach Royal softened after his own daughter died in 73. But I think Coach Royal softened for another reason, because he didn't like the way the sport was heading. And I've said this to several people, and I'll kind of leave you with this. Coach Royal left in 76 because he didn't like the way the industry was turning. He did not like Barry Switzer, even though he and Switzer were great competitors. He didn't like the fact that you had to do certain things now to recruit players. And that he didn't like the fact that you had to be willing to bend, if not break, the rules in order to be completely successful on the football field. He just didn't like the way the industry was turning. He didn't like having to deal with people like Barry Switzer any longer. So he just said, hey, I've done all I can do. I'm getting out. And that's why he retired. And Frank Broyles joined him at the same doggone moment after the same game. I mean, talk about, can you imagine what that would be like now if you had, just as a for instance, let's say we had, Steve Spurrier and Urban Meyer retiring the same night. Do you realize what kind of a tidal wave that would create in the college football world today? But because we didn't have the internet, we didn't even have network television, they have cable in 76. There was no cable TV. Right. Well, there was a little cable TV, but it was only really in mountainous regions of the country where you couldn't get a standard signal. Because I remember that, because I always think, why do they have this little box on their set? When I would visit my cousins who live in El Paso, it was right out in the middle of the mountains out there. And it was because they couldn't get the terrestrial signal from the city. So they had to literally run cable, in order to get TV sets on the other side of the mountains. That was the first cable that you had.
Wow.
I just remember thinking it was such an unbelievable story at the time, and the way Coach Royal treated his players, as their own kids, and the thing that really just absolutely stuck it home for me was the whole issue over, and I told you this before the show started, Eric, Texas was the last all-white national championship team of a major college sport in 1969. It's sort of a dubious honor. I don't think it was something that Coach Royal was ever proud of. True story, he recruited Mean Joe Green. Mean Joe Green. Mean Joe wanted to come to Texas. Coach Royal said, don't do it.
Was he a Texan?
Yeah. He went to the University of North Texas. Coach Royal told him not to do it. And the reason he told him not to do it is he said, this school, this campus, this community, this area, not ready for you.
So, what, because of how he would be treated on
campus? Because of how he would be treated. Because of how he would be treated.
So, I'm trying to get my head around this. So,
yeah.
On Saturdays, you guys love your football.
Oh, of course.
In Texas.
As much as anybody.
If they're wearing burnt orange, they're gods.
Yes.
The other 6 days of the week?
He would have been bleep on a stick.
That's crazy.
Well,
how could people think that way?
That was the common mentality, especially in the South in the 1960s. You're talking about, you're talking about the racial strife that went through.
No, I understand that. I'm just saying I can't get my head around that. I can't.
Well, it's foreign. And you know what? I'm actually glad that it's completely foreign to people nowadays, because it tells me that we have progressed as a society. As we should have. But back in the 1960s, this was big. The guy who actually broke the color barrier in the Old Southwest Conference was Jerry Levias in 1966. Great, speedy wide receiver. He went to SMU. And in fact, I think they did a documentary on him on ESPN. I don't think it was a 30 for 30 thing, but I think they did that. And I got to admit, Levias had a tough time at SMU in 66-67. And Coach Royal, that was about the same time that Mean Joe was, in school. And before that, Coach Royal just told him, no, stay away. We're not ready for you. I don't want to see you have to suffer.
Yeah.
Because this place is not ready for you.
What a shame.
And then, of course, after the national championship season in 69, he finally did say enough's enough. He found one player, a gentleman by the name of Julius Whittier, who wanted to come to UT. He ended up being a backup tight end on the next year's national championship team, which they won again in 70. And then the first star, though, that Darrell Royal ever recruited that was black was Roosevelt Leakes, who played for professionally this week's opponent, the Buffalo Bills. He was a star running back for the Buffalo Bills. And he came to Texas, and he recruited him in 72, came there in 73. And Coach Royal, was able to sort of integrate thereafter. But he was really one of the first coaches that forced integration on a lot of the Southern football teams that were lily white back in that day and age. So that was certainly a huge part of Coach Royal's influence. And the other thing is, and a lot of people don't know this, Coach Royal was the first football coach that ever really brought an academic coordinator onto a football team to help his student athletes, to help his boys, if you will, with their studies.
With the student part.
He called him a brain coach. The reason we called the guy a brain coach, he said, because football coaches shouldn't, we're not smart enough to be messing with this stuff. We need somebody who knows how to help these boys pass their classes and get their degrees. And so they hired a gentleman by the name of Lan Hewlett, who became the first academic counselor for a major college program back in the late 1960s, a practice that is absolutely commonplace today. He was the first one to add someone like that to his staff back in the 1960s. So, a little bit of history behind Darrell Royal, and now you can understand a little more like why I am who I am. Mm-hmm. and really the kind of influence that he's had on that. And that leads me a little bit, and by the way, John Murphy, who's the play-by-play voice of the Buffalo Bills, he's going to join us here in about 5 minutes, so we are going to jump into the Buffalo Bills. But it does lead me kind of to my question today. Obviously, Darrell Royal is a huge influence on my life and to who I am as a sports fan. And I wanted to ask those of you who are listening today if there is a significant figure in the sports world who you've tried to emulate, who you've looked up to, who you've tried to pattern yourself after, who has been a positive influence on who you are today, whether it's an influence on who you are as a fan, who you are as a person, a parent, a businessman or woman. Is there a person in the sports world that has been a positive influence on your life today? Webradio@patriots.com is how you answer us today. That's the email address, webradio@patriots.com. A race ticket hotline, 508-298-0398, 508-298-0398. John.Rook on Facebook, @JRook0722 on Twitter. And by the way, I did get some late tweets on our voting poll yesterday on favorite Patriots past and present.
I see the ballots in front of me. My God, it's overflowing.
We ended up with 17 players from the past, 13 current members of the roster being voted for in the present.
Impressive.
So that was good.
Yeah.
So we spread the vote totals out just a little bit. And so I want those that sent me the tweets later, and I don't have my Twitter page up. I'll call it up here in a moment. But I just want you to know you were counted.
Every vote counts here.
Your vote was heard.
Everyone counts.
Although, I'll make a little political statement here. I'm not sure the majority opinion was heard last night. That's all I'm going to say about that. That's all I got to say about that.
Thanks, Forrest.
That's all I'm going to say. Who the hell came up with the stupid rules for electoral college?
You would have flunked out of that electoral college, wouldn't you?
I would have flunked right the hell out. Oh, my goodness. All right, let's take a quick time out here. John Murphy of the Buffalo Bills joined us, but I really want to get your thoughts on this. If you have somebody that's been an impression on your life as much as Coach Royal was on mine, webradio@patriots.com. Let's hear you in the playbook.
Sullivan Tire and Auto Repair is your Bridgestone Tire headquarters in New England. We have thousands of quality Bridgestone tires in stock at great prices. Save big on such tires as the Bridgestone Dueler HL Alenza, Turanza EL400, the Dueler HT and AT, and the Potenza G0 19 Grid. And if you're looking for a quality tire to get you through the winter, we have Bridgestone Blizzak tires in stock now. Remember, we are New England's headquarters for top flight maintenance with over 100 ASC certified master technicians on staff, utilizing state-of-the-art diagnostic equipment, plus easy online appointments, comfortable waiting areas with free Wi-Fi, free shuttle service, over 65 locations across New England, and the best customer service in the industry. Check out the everyday low prices on Bridgestone tires and make your appointment today at SullivanTire.com. This approval is solely for the purpose of evaluating compliance with Bridgestone's co-op policy. This approval does not in any way constitute, and Bridgestone expressly disclaims, any legal opinion or representation that the ad complies with any applicable laws, rules, or regulations.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then, I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the red zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call *NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics tickets to all games, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
This is Rob Gronkowski. I get lots of mail from fans asking me how they can be more like me, Gronk. It's easy. First, just head down to Dunkin' Donuts and pick up a freshly made bakery sandwich. Second, get a sweet nickname. Third, bench press 225 pounds 28 times. That's it. You're just like me, Gronk. Now hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab a bakery sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'.
Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots, LLC.
This is Patriots Hall of Famer Steve Nelson, and you're listening to Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio.
Welcome back into the Playbook here on Patriots.com Radio. John Rook with PFW's Eric Scalavino. We've got some football coming up on Sunday afternoon. We get back not only to the business of playing after the long, excruciating off week it just seems like it gets longer all the time, doesn't it?
The work week, not the actual bye week itself.
Coming in today, though, I kept thinking it was Thursday. We were just talking about this. Today was Thursday.
Because it's been my second day in a row here with you.
I know. Anyway, so the Buffalo Bills coming in. Patriots won, of course, 52-28 earlier this year in Buffalo. John Murphy is their radio play-by-play voice. We visited with him before in the playbook. He's kind enough to join us now while he's out and about traveling a bit. John, thanks for the time today. It's greatly appreciated. How are you?
I'm doing well. Do you really think, I just heard that commercial, do you really think people ask Rob Gronkowski how they can be more like him? I'm not so sure about
that. No, you'd be surprised.
Yeah.
Around here,
you'd be surprised. Yeah.
He is a beauty. You know, he's a Buffalo guy, you know, and I actually knew his dad a little bit. Still know his dad, and I know Rob since he was kind of a little kid, if you can believe it. I guess people would ask how they can be more like him.
Let's ask you this then. Was he always like this?
Yeah. The whole family's a little bit nutty.
So he's
his father, Gordy, yeah.
He's stuck in a state of arrested development then, huh?
Yeah. They're good guys, really good guys. And
no doubt.
That's why I think, honestly, John, I think that's why a lot of people would love to be like Gronk, just because he's got that childish,
exuberance
about him that just sort of rubs off on you, and you just can't help but like the guy. He's got the big goofy grin, and he's got the very playful attitude, and I know that, as you suggest, his dad and his brothers, they all come by that honestly, and he's turned into one whale of a football player.
Oh, it's early, but he's on track where you guys know better than I do. He's on track to have like a Hall of Fame career based on his first 2.5 seasons. He's unbelievable.
Yeah, well, as Bill Belichick would say, let's not put the guy in Canton just yet.
But, yeah, I know, but if he keeps going like this, you have to.
I'm sure that there are those that would concur. So, how has this Buffalo team changed in your estimation since the last time these two teams met, and has it changed for the better?
No, it's hard to make that argument. This Patriots game coming up Sunday represents the end of really a six-game gauntlet for the Bills that started with the first Patriots game. They really haven't done well in the gauntlet either. They're 1-4 to date in the six games they played so far. It's really been tough. The Patriots, they lost badly. The score got out of hand. They played a pretty good first half against New England up in Orchard Park, obviously, but things got away in a bad, bad way in the second half when the Patriots kept hammering away with a run against Buffalo's nickel. And then it just kind of got worse from there. The following week, the Bills went out to San Francisco and lost really badly there. Then they pulled out a win in Arizona in overtime, and then have lost a couple of since then. So it's really hard to argue that the Bills are playing better now than they were, when this stretch started with New England 5-6 weeks ago.
I have to say that the one thing that really strikes me as odd is that it seems like the team that gets to 21 first is the team that loses in terms of this recent rivalry between these two teams. So I'm wondering if you think that might hold hold service this weekend.
Yeah, I'm sure the Bills would love to obviously get out to a 21-point lead, although that's not safe based on the way this series has gone. And I do think the Bills can sort of be encouraged by the way that they have, the second half was huge in the game at Orchard Park back in late September. But they first half, they played with them toe-to-toe, I thought. And there were two games last year, obviously they had the big comeback win in Orchard Park a year ago, the first meeting, and then got up 21-0 in the second meeting. It's a bad matchup for the Bills. A lot of it, I think, is the Patriots, let's face it, you guys know better than anybody. The Patriots will go up against a lot of teams that they're a tough matchup for. But Gronkowski causes big problems. Welker has caused big problems. And most of all, Tom Brady causes big problems for the Bills. They really struggled defensively this year, and the rankings show it. I think they took some steps forward in their loss at Houston last Sunday on the defensive side of the ball, but still a long way to go. And they really can't let anybody run against them the way the Patriots did back on September 30th.
So, in your estimation, then, is this Buffalo team now? You talked about how they were coming off the end of this six game gauntlet. Where is this team now in terms of its development? Are they still competitive enough this year to make a run here late in the year for a potential playoff spot? Where did this team fall short when so many people seem to like them as a potential contender in the division before the season started?
They've had a lot of shortcomings. The defense was really shaky for the first half of the season, other than a couple of bright spots, and they'll need to get that fixed before they can think about contending for a playoff spot. Ryan Fitzpatrick has been a little bit inconsistent with his play this year. Had a pretty good game against Tennessee just before the bye, and then didn't get much done offensively. Obviously, just 3 field goals last Sunday in Houston.
Yeah.
They've really got to get better both sides of the ball. But if you believe in strength of schedule, quality of opponents, there is an opportunity for the Bills if they can just survive and pull out a win at New England this Sunday. They'd be at 4-5. 5 of their last 7 games are at home, including one at Toronto, which they count as a home venue. And most of those 7 games that remain are manageable games. I think they're, as I said, the gauntlet part of the schedule is about to pass once they finish up this trip to Foxborough. And as you look around the AFC, it's not implausible to think that a team with certainly 9 wins, maybe even 8 wins, could squeak into the playoffs of the AFC. I mean, that's really the Bills' best chances, I think, to keep their flickering playoff hopes alive. But they've got to play better both sides of the ball to have any chance to do anything.
And like everybody else, John, I know Buffalo's starting to scratch and claw with injuries. You had to place Terrence McGee and Eric Pierce on injured reserve. Actually, you ended up signing a former member of the Patriots roster and Thomas Welch, an offensive lineman, I believe, what was it, just today?
Yes, today, earlier today, yep.
So
they've had some injuries on the offensive line. They're a little bit healthier now than they were, maybe a month or so ago. Their rookie left tackle, Cordy Glenn, came back and played in the Houston game. He's had a pretty good season after missing 3 games with an injury. Their starting right guard, Craig Urbick, is back again. He came back for the game, the game at Houston last Sunday. So they're a little bit healthier there. They had both running backs healthy. When the Bills first played the Patriots on September 30th, Fred Jackson had just come back from his knee injury suffered on opening day, and he really wasn't himself. He had a knee brace on, wasn't comfortable with it. And so, Fred, I would say overall they're probably a little bit healthier now than they were maybe a month ago at this time.
Well, that's probably a good thing for the Bills, bad thing for the for the Patriots. I got to admit, though, I watched C.J. Spiller play, and I'm wondering how come he doesn't get the ball more than he gets it. Any thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was a big issue in coming off the loss at Houston when in the second half, and the Bills trailed 7-6 at half and were down 14-6 early in the third quarter, still a game that was in contention. And in the second half, combined, Spiller and Fred Jackson had a total of 3 carries. So that the Texans played straight-up base defense against them. The Bills thought there were some opportunities to throw the ball, but they really kind of, I think, deviated from what should be their strength and what is their strength, running the football. They need to get the ball in Spiller's hands and Fred Jackson's hands. Spiller is more of a game-breaking, home-run-hitting type of running back, where Fred is more of a grinded-out guy. But together, they're pretty effective. I think the Bills are 4th or 6th best running attack in the NFL because of those two and because of a pretty good offensive line. That's where their strength is, and that's what they're going to need to do to be in contention with the Patriots this Sunday.
I was impressed even before that September 30th game with a guy who reminds me a lot of Rob Gronkowski on that roster, and that's Scott Chandler. I think he's kind of one of the more underrated tight ends in this league, given his size and his abilities, and he certainly did a number on the Patriots in the early going in that game. What have you seen from him in his development thus far?
Yeah, he's a good he's a good tight end. He's big and frisk. Probably where you make the Gronkowski connection is just stature. He's not as athletic, I don't think, as Rob Gronkowski, but he's certainly big and long. He's got long arms and can get passes. I have a sense, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but my sense is he was slightly more productive last year, at least this season, than he has been to date, this year season. So, and a lot of that is a function of their struggles with, the quarterback spot and their struggles overall offensively. And I also, I'm a big Rob Gronkowski fan and a big Scott Chandler fan. I don't think Chandler has the ability to contribute as much blocking as Rob Gronkowski does. But all that said, he's a good target for Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's become a more important target for Ryan Fitzpatrick since they lost their slot receiver, David Nelson, early on in the season. And I think he will continue to be an important guy for the Bills' offense moving forward.
Sure. And, John, sort of along those lines, I know that the Bills have taken some criticism from, I guess, media members, what have you, maybe fans too, about why Ryan Fitzpatrick might not be taking more shots down the field. I'm assuming part of that is because they're, by design, trying to get the ball, at least in theory, in the hands of maybe Spiller and Jackson more often. But I'm wondering if that thought process might not change a little more this week, considering the Patriots' penchant for giving up big plays in the secondary.
Yeah, it could. I think you know, a lot of it is, you know, they know the limitations. First of all, they're running Chan Gailey's offense, which is a lot of short passing game and slant patterns and crossing patterns. That's what they want to do. That's how their offense is structured. I think their offense is structured in an attempt to play into the strengths of Ryan Fitzpatrick, who doesn't have the strongest arm. He's a pretty accurate passer and a very smart, capable quarterback, but he's not a guy that you want chucking it all over the field. And I think the third thing is what you just said. They want to run the ball there. They want to spread out most teams and run the ball against your nickel and dime defense. The Patriots thwarted that in their first meeting back on September 30th. And I'm sure it's going to be interesting to me, the chess match this game, because we know what the Patriots, did against the Bills the first time. It'll be interesting to see what they do this time, and on both sides of the ball, I think that's going to be the case.
I pretty much watched the entire game against Houston this past week, and while I thought you guys were very, very competitive, obviously you never came up with the big play that you really needed in order to get by the Texans. I thought Mario Williams seemed to be a little bit more the Mario Williams that you guys maybe expected you were going to get. Can he still be the kind of player, in your estimation, that you thought you were going to get before the season started, or is he pretty much what he is right now?
Well, I think you saw the best of Mario Williams that he's had with the Bills so far this season. I think you saw it in that Houston game. They need more of that. They need it more consistently, and they need it, on an every-game basis. He had his wrist surgically repaired, and he had arthroscopic surgery on his wrist, and the Bills by week well, it's just about 2 weeks ago now. And I think more than anything, he said his wrist felt better, but more than anything, I think he was a lot more confident in what he could do, and he played that way against the Texans. The Bills, I think, were quite pleased with the way Mario Williams played in the game last Sunday, but they do need more of it, and they needed it the first six games of the season, couldn't get it from him because of his wrist injury. I think they're hoping and actually expecting that the Mario Williams we saw against the Texans is the one they're going to get moving down the second half of the year.
Yeah, and I know that you've also taken some injuries in the defensive backfield as well. I know Aaron Williams is out for a few weeks, so it's going to be just kind of cobbling things back together. Who do you expect to step up there?
I think they're going to give Leonis McKelvin a shot to start the game at cornerback, a former first-round draft pick who's been in and out of the lineup. He's been a great special teamer. Leads the NFL in punt return yardage, and I think his third or fourth in kick return yardage. He's a tremendous athlete. He can run with anybody in the league. Leotis has had issues sometimes finding the ball in coverage and making a play on the ball in coverage. But he's more than capable athlete, and I think he's going to get the first crack at lining up with the starters at the quarterback spot. They have a young guy, second-year guy, Justin Rogers, who probably gets some snaps. He's been their nickel corner the last couple of weeks or so. But, they did have, you mentioned, they had to go out and sign a corner just yesterday
today,
a cornerback today to just to fill out the roster because they were with Aaron Williams out a couple weeks, Terrence McGee to IR, they definitely needed some bodies back there.
Right, and then on the offensive side, Stevie Johnson, I left the game against Houston, I guess some sort of a contusion or whatever. You guys expect him back, you think, for Sunday?
Yeah, I think they do expect him back. They're talking about how he may not be able to practice today, but I think they expect him to work his way into practice later in the week. He had a thigh bruise, quad muscle bruise in the game at Houston, and he stayed in the game. He went off for a play or two and came back in, and it was tough to watch. He sort of hobbled around a lot, and even gets out of the huddle. And I honestly believe that was a fairly significant reason for the Bills' offensive struggles last Sunday. Stevie was not himself and couldn't get downfield. There were a couple of misfires between him and Fitzpatrick that I think were a result of Stevie not being Stevie. He's had injury issues the last year or two. He's had a groin injury that really kept him off the practice field almost every week last year, and then he was able to come back and play on Sundays. It wouldn't surprise me if he got really limited practice reps this week and then was able to play on Sunday. He's kind of a gamer, and I think that's like that he kind of fancies himself as a game day player. But I'm anticipating they haven't released a practice participation report yet. I'm anticipating he will be, limited in practice, if not get any practice reps at all today. And then as the week goes on, he'll probably get a little bit more. And I think he's going to play on Sunday.
All right, good stuff. John, thanks so much for spending a little bit of time with us today. It's greatly appreciated. Safe travels to you, and we'll see you on Sunday.
Okay, guys, thanks a lot. We'll see you Sunday.
You bet. All right. John Murphy is the radio play-by-play voice of the Buffalo Bills joining us here in the playbook.
Yeah, good insight.
Yeah, good insight. One of the good guys in the game, that does his job as well as just about anybody. He's been around the Buffalo scene before he took over the voice, play-by-play announcer. He was the color analyst on the Bills Network broadcast for several years as well. So he probably knows Buffalo about as well as anybody knows Buffalo. Good stuff right there. In fact, and somebody that might know Buffalo almost as much as John Murphy is Big Al in Valdosta, Georgia. What's up, Big Al?
Hey. Well, the sky, you know, price of gas, usual stuff.
were you happy with the results of the election yesterday?
I was thrilled. What can I say? I was thrilled.
Really?
Even though
your state did not go the way that you apparently intended.
Well, you know, that's the thing. It's 50 statewide elections. It's not really a national election. It's 50 statewide elections. And, yeah, that is in the Constitution.
Shouldn't the popular vote count for something?
Not according to the Constitution. You want to change
damn
the Constitution?
Damn that Constitution. This is the second time in four elections now that this has happened.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, that the Electoral College and the popular vote turns out to be, you know, different things.
I would go back and double-check your math on that, Jean-Rook. It turns out that the popular vote favored the president the same as the Electoral College did.
This year. But it wasn't that way. It wasn't that way much of the night.
Well, I mean, you know, sometimes the score changes from the third quarter to the fourth quarter, too.
I'm not buying it. There's some fun.
You could be ahead
I'm not buying that. I'm not buying
that's
it.
That's why they play
some,
four quarters of football.
There's some funny business going on. That's all I'm telling you. There's some funny business going on.
Well, if there's some funny business, it's 2 million votes worth of funny business, because that was the final, separation at the end.
Yeah, I think so.
Anyway, I live on the border, so I went into Florida and helped out in Florida, you know, get out the vote.
Oh, good for you.
Very impressive, whatever your politics may or may not be. I mean, you've got to admire the way this thing operated. I mean, he had field offices all over the battleground states. And, you know, from here in Valdosta, it's only about 45 minutes or so to Lake City, Florida, which is the next, town over the border.
Mm-hmm.
And, the president had a field operation in Lake City, which is not a very big town, smaller than Valdosta. And they had like 30 people working in there. I mean, it was just unbelievable. And so I went out they knock on doors, and we found somebody. We drive them to the polls and give them a ride. They'd go vote. We'd drive them back. I mean, it was all very targeted, very scientific. I was just.
What did you do to them while they were in the
impressed.
Car, Al? That's what I want to know.
What's that?
What did you do to them while they were in the car to force them to vote your way?
Well, you know, we already had them targeted. We knew that they were going to vote our way.
Uh-huh.
That wasn't the question.
Okay.
You didn't have to do a lot of convincing. You just had to get them to the polls. That was the thing.
I'm just messing with you.
You know, that's the challenge. You know how they're going to vote. It's just getting them there that's the challenge. But anyways, John, you mentioned Jim Bertelsen before,
mm-hmm.
and he was a classic. He played in the NFL, I think, a little bit with the Rams.
That's correct.
Texas running back with Steve Wooster, as I recall.
Steve Wooster,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
He was Wooster.
He was the fullback on that. Of course, Darryl Royal, for those that know, he was responsible for the start of the wishbone back in the late mm-hmm. '60s. He'd given mm-hmm. all the credit to his assistant Emory Ballard, who passed away a couple of years ago as well. But I remember a story that Coach Royal told about Steve Wooster in particular, and Duffy Doherty, who was a late great coach at Michigan State. He was a mm-hmm. part of that Michigan State team in 66 that tied Notre Dame 10-10,
right.
Which was thought to be the game of the century, at least of that particular decade.
Right.
And
right.
And Duffy Doherty came down to basically grill Coach Royal about, well, how do you run the wishbone? How do you do this and how do you do that? And Coach Royal basically said, Duffy, don't even bother coming down here because you don't want to know anything about the wishbone. You'll never run the wishbone at Michigan State. All you care about is my fullback, Steve Wooster, and he's here for three more years. True story.
Well, and of course, I believe that there's a baseball player. Was it Houston Street?
Well, Houston Street.
Isn't his dad Gene Street?
Yes, Houston Street's father. Of course, he's a relief pitcher for San Diego now, I think.
Right.
Was it San Diego?
His dad is James Street,
I believe. Yes, his father, James Street, was the quarterback of that 69
yep.
Texas team that won the national title. That is correct.
Yep. And that's a great team.
People don't realize this, but James Street, even though he never played professional football,
right.
He was a very good pitcher and was drafted in the major leagues.
A terrific athlete.
I saw James Street throw a no-hitter against TCU.
Wow.
It was literally 3 months after he pitched Texas to the national title against Arkansas.
He throws a no-no.
And Notre Dame. And he threw a no, and it was just like, another day at the office.
That's
guy throws
great.
A no-hitter. So my buddy, actually, we go to the game because we wanted to see James Street. They just won the national title. So we go
right.
watch TCU baseball, and I think it was me and my buddy and like six other people in the stands, right? Because, it's TCU baseball. Nobody cares. And Texas was there that day. James Street throws the no-hitter. We're all, like, aghast because, we're little kids and we don't know any better, and so we thought it was the greatest thing we'd ever seen in our lives. My buddy brings a football, throws it over the fence and said, would you autograph this after he throws a no-hitter? And I think he still has the autographed football from James Street
wow.
the day that
Whoa.
He threw a no-hitter on the baseball field.
Whoa.
But that just tells you the kind of talent that this team had and that really runs through the Street family. So
Well, absolutely. And, that was back in the day when, you didn't have the NCAA controlled all the television in college football.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
As far as who got on it. It wasn't all free market like it is now. The NCAA determined who was going to be on. And it seemed like there were certain games that were on every year, and being a New Englander, we really don't, it's not the college football, it's just not the same as it is in the Southeast and Southwest.
No question.
Interest, but I always was intrigued watching that Texas-Oklahoma game every year, and that Georgia-Florida game every year. And
the rivalry games that bring out more than just, the play on the field. They bring out passion. They bring out ugliness sometimes. They bring out venom.
Sometimes.
They bring out energy. I mean, all you have to do is Texas-OU week, just listen to this show and hear me and strippers go back and forth each other. So that's all you have to do because that's just the way it is.
I think I heard Tim Brando say this once. I thought it was a clever observation. He said the best thing about college football is the fans, and the worst thing about college football
is the fans. It's
but,
true.
Whatever it is, it's the most interesting thing. Let's put it that way.
You don't say that
like
about any
college
sport.
Football fan, but I've just always, been obviously a Patriots fan, and as far as there was a member though of the Patriots who really had a lot to do. You were talking about. Integrating Southern football.
Right.
And Sam Cunningham, by default, really had a lot to do with changing, I think a lot of the coaches in the SEC, and I'm sure it was the same in the Southwest, if it were up to the coaches, it would have happened a long time before it happened. But they were under a lot of pressure from alumni, and boosters and stuff, and they didn't really, I'm not sure that they really, it was all up to them a lot. If it had been, it would have been different. But Sam Cunningham came in here with USC, and they blew out Alabama. And basically, Bear Bryant, as the story goes, as you may know, went to the boosters and said, "Look, we can't have this happen again. We've got to start mixing it up, or else, we're not going to be able to compete."
Right.
So basically, I don't think he intended to do it, but Sam Cunningham, because he had a great night in Tuscaloosa with USC, an intersectional game, really had a lot to do with integrating Southern football.
Yeah,
New England Patriot.
Anytime he comes back to Foxborough and we get a chance to talk to him, that's one of the things that always ends up coming up. And Mr. Kraft always brings that up too when he introduces him to crowds.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
That still gets discussed.
Oh,
all
God,
these
yeah.
Years later. That's
oh,
incredible.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
I think that's one of the things that really has, made me appreciate, my time being in this organization, Al, because there is a familial type feel to it, and there is respect involved, and there is there's a lot of the things that I grew up with that are in place already here in this organization from the top all the way down, the way they run the organization and such. And as I was opining about, Coach Royal a short while ago, I really feel similarly about a lot of the way things are done here. And so for me, this is more of a natural fit, more of a natural extension for what I've done professionally, just because this is the way I've always tried to operate my life.
Well, they got, I love the way the Patriots handle their alumni and bringing the guys back and making them, feel like they're still a part of the team or whatever, bringing Grogan back, bringing Russ Francis back to talk to the team. I think that's a great thing. I'm sure it is for the players and for, if you are an old school fan, you remember those guys, and it just makes you feel good to see them still hanging around the program, so to speak, you know, and being a part of it. You know, it just, you say, well, you know, that guy's still one of the guys. You know, it sort of makes you feel good to see that.
No question.
Anyways, about the last half of the schedule is really what I called about.
Okay.
And I think I have a series of silver linings that I'd like to try out on you.
Several, you know, silver linings?
You may or may not choose to buy this. I understand. But
okay,
look, here's the deal. We've got those three games in a row at Miami, Houston at home, San Francisco at home, which I think are tough games. Although, you know, increasingly, you never know with the Colts and, you know, I mean, it's the NFL. I mean, who knows any given Sunday, right? But
sure,
as far as that, those three right there, Dolphins, Houston, San Francisco, the Dolphins game, the game at Miami, we're going to be playing them after the Thanksgiving game. So we're going to have a little bit of a longer rest period there. I think that's going to help us in that game. I think they have to play on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get, I think we catch a break on that. Houston, it's going to be the third of three consecutive road games, if I'm not mistaken, for Houston.
For them.
For Houston,
yeah.
Yes.
Yes, and I don't know what the stats are, but I believe the stats are staggering in favor of the home team when you play a road team and it's their third straight.
Yeah,
on the road.
That wouldn't surprise me, number one. Number two, I'm still stunned that they do that in this day and age in the NFL.
You know, that you'd think that'd be something that they wouldn't have to do.
Can you imagine the screaming and crying if that had happened to the Patriots?
Oh, you know, we have problems with the schedule pretty much every year anyway. A lot of the fans do.
Honestly, the Patriots
out to get us.
No, I think the Patriots have
to do as a fan.
Yeah, the Patriots though have really. I think they've got tremendous breaks on the schedule the last few years.
I think so. I think that, you know, I think in one reason, but we do manage it a little bit ourselves. I think one of the reasons why we volunteer for these London games is because, you know, it puts the bye week right in the middle of the season.
Yes, sir. That's a very good point.
So you can manage your own schedule to a certain extent.
Yes, you can.
However limited it may be. But
just be willing to volunteer and, you know, go overseas. Or,
there you go.
Or take, you know, the extended West Coast swing or whatever it may be, right?
Sure,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Right.
So I think that bodes well that Houston will be on their third straight road game. And that's a break there. And then the third game with San Francisco. Mm-hmm. If there is one team in this world that little Tommy Brady gets fired up to play against,
yeah,
it's the San Francisco 49ers.
Because that was his favorite team.
He is going to prepare for them,
Joe,
like it's
Montana,
the damn Super Bowl.
Bill Walsh, oh yeah, yeah. Right.
Well, and here's the thing. If you recall, now we're playing them in 2012. The last time we played them, it was 2008 on the road. He was injured.
Right, correct.
The last time we played him before that, it was 2004. It was the last game of the season at home.
Right.
And we had,
I don't think he played
locked
them.
Up. We
he did not play.
Up. What's that?
He did not
he
play.
Didn't play them.
Well, he played a little bit.
Well, but, I mean, he
what did he
really
play, a series?
Significantly.
Well, a series.
Well, I can't remember, but I think it might have been a quarter or two. I mean, but the point is, that game was, the Patriots couldn't move up or down. They were locked into the number two seed.
Correct.
Behind Pittsburgh.
Correct.
And there was no way, I mean, the game was literally meaning, I say meaningless, so you hate to say that.
It was meaningless.
It affect the standings,
right,
one way or the other.
Right, you have a good memory. That's correct. Yeah.
So he didn't play much in that game. And then before that, it would have been 2001. That was before the NFL realigned with their current setup of divisions. In 2001, we played the NFC West, but that was when the NFC West had five teams,
mm-hmm,
three of which were in the South.
Right.
We still had Atlanta, Carolina, and New Orleans,
right,
in the West. And we played all three of those. We played the Rams. We didn't play the Niners.
Right, that is correct. So
we didn't play him in 2001. In 2004, it was like a throwaway game. In 2008, he was injured. I mean, this is the first time that little Tommy Brady is going to be able to play.
He's not that little, by the way.
I understand
I like
what
to
you're
throw
saying.
That in just to
I get
you
this.
Know, just to, just
no,
to mix
I,
it up a little bit.
No,
little
I think it's
Tommy
good.
Little Tommy Brady,
yeah, yeah,
is going to play his hometown team in a game that matters, and he's probably going to play all four quarters. It's the first time in his life that this is actually going to happen.
So yeah, we have our fingers crossed on that.
He's going to be fired up like he's like you. There's no way to calculate.
You're probably
you almost
right.
Have to, you'll have to calm him down, John.
You're probably right. Well, that you have to remember, Al, that I said here last week during the bye week, I said that my prediction is this team does 7-1 and they'll have a shot at 8-0 for a second straight year, the second half
that's
here.
That's a totally reasonable prediction. I wouldn't disagree with that a bit. You got to figure you're going to stub your toe somewhere. You know, it's the NFL. It's hard to say you're going to run the table. But I think it's certainly conceivable. It's not out of the realm of possibility to think that they can go 7-1 down the stretch. And if you go 7-1, what does that make you, 12-4?
Correct.
You know, I mean, what's wrong with 12-4?
Nothing.
Not a damn thing.
No, that'll not only win the division going away, but that still has you in the running for a bye, I think.
You might be the second seed,
yeah.
But you'll at least get a first round bye.
Correct.
I think at 12-4, we'll see what happens
you
with the
should,
Ravens. But
you should have that as a possibility. So
there you go. We need the Ravens to kind of step in it a couple
yes,
of times.
Yes, that is correct. That is absolutely correct. And I think the schedule probably sets up for them to do that, especially on top of all their injuries. Al, before we move on here, the question that I asked off the top was, is there a sports figure that's been a heavy influence in your life?
You know, that's actually a very easy question for me to answer. And you're going to think it's, one of these sort of off-the-wall things. But when I was a kid, watching, football and playing in the backyard and doing like we all do, I like a lot of kids in New England, I was 50% a Boston Patriots fan and really 50% a New York Giants fan.
Sure.
Because we saw more Giants games than the people in New York.
Don't tell me you were Y.A. Tittle.
No, Fran Tarkenton.
Oh, Fran Tarkenton. Okay. Well, you're not that old.
He had those 5 years with the Giants.
Yeah.
And I think that would have been, like, for me, that would have been like age 10 to 15.
Right, right.
And, they weren't terribly great years, but I just thought he was the greatest. The way he ran around back there, and he sort of played his own brand of ball that was different than a lot of the other quarterbacks. I just thought he was just cool as hell. And I thought he was great, and I wasn't really – much of a Namath fan until they got into that Super Bowl, and of course I root for anything AFL, and I've got a Namath jersey now, which I never would have. He was just a bum to me until that game. Mm-hmm. But when he got into that game, then yes, go AFL, go Joe, So,
sure.
I thought that Fran was just tremendous, and I got my dad. He happened to know a guy that was a sign painter. It was a buddy of his. And I had an old white football helmet that, you just wear screwing around. And it was, because it was white, it would be easy to paint without, messing it up.
Sure.
Because it was, flexible colors you could add.
What did you paint on it?
I painted it. I mean, it was an exact New York Giants replica with a number 10. I mean, it could have been Fran Tarkenton's helmet.
Wow.
It was just perfect.
Wow.
And I still got that to this day.
Wow.
I sent it to Fran Tarkenton's website. He autographed it and said
very
that.
Cool.
He is very cool. He lives in North Georgia. He hangs out up in the North Georgia mountains. I live down South Georgia, but he's up in the North Georgia mountains up in lake. There's a little lake up there called Lake Burton. If you want to look it up.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very beautiful place to go, and he's got a place on the lake up there. And,
nice.
That's where I spent.
Well, he was a Georgia Bulldog, wasn't he?
He was a Georgia Bulldog.
I thought I remember.
Fran Tarkenton was? Yes. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Yep,
Georgia
absolutely.
Bulldog.
And he was back just before Dooley became coach. He was like the last quarterback before Dooley took over.
Oh, God, now we're really dating ourselves.
We're going way
I
back.
I really feel old now. Gee, Al, thanks so much for the call.
And, hey, no problem. Have a great day.
All right, thank you. God, Big Al always has a way to just, let me hear and make you feel good about this one. All right, before I let you go, I want you to answer the question, too. Is there a sports figure that has had an influence on you, either personally or professionally?
I'd say probably a little bit of both. Not maybe in as profound a way as Coach Royal was with you, but I remember, and I think it happened on the same day. I met two sports figures on the same day that I've never forgotten this. It was when the Patriots used to practice in training camp at Bryant College.
Yeah.
What used to be Bryant College, now Bryant University.
University, right.
It was Bryant College back then. And it was during my young playing days when I was a prep school player. And the Giants came for double session practices, which was not unheard of back then. They would do that every so often. And it was when Lawrence Taylor was still with the Giants. I think they might have just won the Super Bowl, coming off a Super Bowl year, too, as well, I think. It might have been. So it was all of those. It was Sims, Hostetler, Carl Banks, Lawrence Taylor, all of those famous Giants from the late 80s, early 90s kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the Patriots had a kicker at the time named Greg Davis.
Okay.
I was here for a very short time.
All right.
Very short time. And I remember, because I was, a budding kicker at the time, and I remember wanting to find out from a professional kicker certain things about how I could improve my game. And I remember Greg Davis used to do something weird. He'd have his holder tilt the ball sideways. It was a kind of a weird thing, and I always thought it was like a mistake. But after practice, when you go and get autographs at training camp, there's a rope you have to stand behind.
Sure.
And there's only a certain number of players that come over each day and sign. Back then at Bryant College, it was a free for all. As soon as practice ended, they let the ropes down and you could roam the field and go up to any player or coach and swarm them and get autographs and talk to them or whatever. It was a completely different atmosphere back then.
Interesting.
So I remember going up to, I remember seeing Lawrence Taylor walking from, this was before practice, walking from the facility at Bryant to the practice field. And, kids are yelling and screaming his name and wanting him to come sign autographs. And he is stone-faced, just looking straight ahead, not acknowledging, not even waving, not doing anything. And I thought, oh, that's kind of, that's kind of cruel. But, it's before practice. Maybe he's got his game face on or whatever. So afterwards, when there's the free-for-all, the people are, and everyone's trying to go up to Lawrence Taylor, and he starts yelling at kids.
Wow.
People, get the out of my way.
Yeah.
Get the hell, I need to get, just being a complete a-hole.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, God almighty, these poor, and these kids were stunned because he's a huge individual.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking up to him thinking, oh my God, there's my hero. And then your hero starts cursing you out. You're a kid.
Yeah.
Young kid. And I remember looking at that thinking, oh my God, that's one of the meanest things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So I'm on my mission to go and try to find Greg Davis. And he's nobody is going up to Greg Davis. He's got his stuff and he's trying to walk back. And it's really hot, a 90 degree day, and he's all sweaty. And I'm thinking, oh man. I was just Greg, can I talk to you for a second? He was like, yeah, sure. And I explained my situation and what I was doing, and I wanted to talk to him about stuff. I remember he put down his pads and all this stuff, and he spent probably about 15 minutes with me talking about the intricacies of kicking a football.
Wow.
And why he had his holder hold the ball a certain way. And I remember thinking, I know he was just a kicker and he wasn't around for very long, but and there weren't tons of people swarming him. But here it was, he just finished practice. He was obviously not in any kind of condition to want to talk
Spartan
to anybody.
Spartan conditions of Bryant College anywhere.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And he's fighting for a job. He certainly didn't have it locked up at that point. And he's going out of his way to talk to some teenage kid about something like that, whereas some a-hole like Lawrence Taylor is going around treating people like he was.
You know what happens with guys like that, right?
Yeah,
what goes around comes around.
Right.
I think it did for him.
It sure did.
Yeah.
It sure did. But I remember that just something that has always stuck with me on, and that happened on the same day.
Wow.
And
that's bizarre to have that happen on the same day.
Yeah.
Where you can be that influenced both ways.
Yeah. Two diametric opposite things. And
wow.
And from that point on, I kind of, because that was kind of the first time I ever really got to see at Bryant College, was to see the heroes, quote unquote, that you grew up watching on television, and they become real when you actually see them in person.
Sure, absolutely.
They're not just abstract thoughts or images.
They're really there, really.
And
out
I remember
there, right?
thinking, boy, I remember just having this whole paradigm shift in my head about how to look at professional athletes and just superstars in general, and that has just always stayed with me.
And it's made Eskel who he is today.
Well, maybe. I don't know if it would go that far, but it certainly has influenced on whenever I'm in that situation. And I
get it.
And people ask
Absolutely.
Me about professional athletes. I always think back to that. kind of thing a little bit, too.
I think that's very cool. That's kind of what we're getting at today here inside the playbook. If there is a professional or even amateur, if there's a sports figure that's left an impression on you, really, that you carry with you to this day in a positive or even in a negative sense, like Greg Davis did for Eric, like Coach Royal did for me, like Fran Tarkenton did for Big Al and Valdosta. We're kind of curious to that, and that's why we asked the question today. All right. We never got to a practice report today.
We didn't. We can do that very quickly.
Very quickly, go.
Aaron Hernandez was back.
He was back today.
Looked like he was doing pretty well in drills, cutting hard off of that right ankle, which is the one that's been giving him the problems. So that was good news for him. Brandon Spikes continues to ride an exercise bike, even though he's in full uniform. So I don't know.
Why do you think that is?
I really don't know. And this is all after he said he's never felt better and he's felt great and he feels like he's 18 again. So I can only assume that he had a terrible year when he was 18. Because ever since he said that, he's been sort of out of commission.
Interesting.
Well, so we'll see about that. Just three players missing: Brandon Bolden, Tracy White, Trevor Scott. No surprises there, really. But they were in the bubble practicing because of the weather today. And before we go, you want today's word?
Of course.
Okay.
You didn't think we were going to come
back? Gentlemen, children of all ages, it's time to pull up your britches, put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corn cob pipes, and gather around the fire for Eric Scalavino's Word of the Day.
I love how he says,
yes,
word.
Yes. Brings a lot of profound.
Sort of a real Alistair MacLean type thing.
Yes.
Word.
He really overacted there, didn't he?
Yes, I know.
I like it very much.
All right, today's word
Well, in honor of your friend, Daryl Royal, and the way we open the show, I'm going to go with elegiac.
Elegiac.
Mm-hmm. E-L-E-G-I-A-C.
Elegiac.
Elegiac.
Okay.
It's an adjective. It means having a mournful quality.
So you had an elegiac
introduction
to the show today in respect of my
right.
Yeah.
And it's from the word elegy, which is basically like a eulogy.
A eulogy, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Elegiac. I like that. That's a good job out of you, E-Scal.
Again, we're trying to tie it into the show somehow.
To take note of this, you actually might make a radio guy someday.
I'm trying, damn it.
I know. He's scuffling around with his newspaper thing, you know. Kind of like, the hell with this. Let's do radio. It's much more fun.
It is.
All right. Talk to you tomorrow.
All right, buddy.
All right, thanks. Eric Scalavino, PFW. You've got to sneak in a timeout. Field Yates from ESPN Boston is going to come join us in the playbook.
Bridgestone Tire Headquarters in New England. We have thousands of quality Bridgestone tires in stock at great prices. Save big on such tires as the Bridgestone Dueler HL Alenza, Turanza EL400, the Dueler HT and AT, and the Potenza G019 Grid. And if you're looking for a quality tire to get you through the winter, we have Bridgestone Blizzak tires in stock now. Remember, we are New England's headquarters for top flight maintenance with over 100 ASC certified master technicians on staff, utilizing state-of-the-art diagnostic equipment, plus easy online appointments, comfortable waiting areas with free Wi-Fi, free shuttle service, over 65 locations across New England, and the best customer service in the industry. Check out the everyday low prices on Bridgestone tires and make your appointment today at SullivanTire.com. This approval is solely for the purpose of evaluating compliance with Bridgestone's co-op policy. This approval does not in any way constitute, and Bridgestone expressly disclaims, any legal opinion or representation that the ad complies with any applicable laws, rules, or regulations.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then, I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Hope's up, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the Red Zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call Star NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Story Time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Hey, it's Rob Gronkowski, Pats tight end and big-time Duncan fan. The secret to my success? Coach drew up a play called Gronk, run downfield, catch ball out of air, and we give you freshly made bakery sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. I say Coach is a genius.
No defense keeps Gronk from his freshly made bakery sandwiches. Hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab your go-to sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots LLC.
Now is your chance to hit up John Rook inside the Patriots playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Call 508-298-0398. That's 508-298-0398. Now, back to your host, John Rook.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number two, Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio. Our question of the day, webradio at Patriots.com. You can certainly hit the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398. Or you can send me a Facebook post at John.Rook or tweet me at JRook0722. But, I was curious to note if there was a sports influence in your life, whether or not it happened to be in a positive or in a negative influence, something like the story that Eric just told or that we heard from our caller Al just a little while ago. But if there is an influence from the sports world, something that you've held on to for a long time that maybe has even helped kind of define who you are today. Like I mentioned at the top of the show with Darrell Royal passing away, the former great Texas coach passing away. I really would like to hear your story, or at least we'll be reading your story and sharing some of them with our other listeners today. Webradio at Patriots.com. I know that there is somebody out there who got an autograph from somebody that, you know, back in the day and age when you were a young kid that has to be influenced one way or the other. That has to be. And that's what I'm looking for today. I'm kind of looking for these stories. For instance, my friend JD sends me this on Facebook. He says, JR, nice story about Darrell Royal. It's very touching. I think I may have been at that game, too, that we were there. We probably were, JD. We probably were all there together. I know I went to at least one UT-TCU game back then that was a total blowout, and I also remember hanging out trying to get players' chin straps. Very cool. That would make a good short story if you ever thought about writing it down. Yeah. I should probably do that someday. Mary Beth writes on Facebook. She says, I know exactly what Eric is talking about. When my son was about 5 or 6, we took him to Bryant to see the Patriots practice. He asked Drew Bledsoe to sign his cap. Drew stopped, signed the cap, and spoke to my son. We still have that little Patriots cap. I think that made my son a fan for life. Times were a bit different now.
You should come here and you can do this damn radio show.
That's a good one. That's a good drop to keep. Field Yates covers the Pats for ESPN Boston and just to join the ESPN Boston crew this year. And so I'm sure that you've seen his stuff throughout the course of the football season. But you're not a newbie to this game because you've kind of spent some time in and around other teams and such. And why don't you kind of give folks the background of where you came from before you came here to cover this team for ESPN Boston?
Now the mic is back
now
on.
As
you mentioned, I have some experience around the game, and most recently I spent some time with the Kansas City Chiefs, working there in both the coaching and scouting department. So kind of picked up the game, and that actually was preceded by some time interning here with the Patriots. So I've got some fairly decent knowledge of that organization, and then the Chiefs, which is run in some ways similarly to the Patriots, obviously because of the influence of general manager Scott Pioli and Romeo Crennel, the head coach, and others who are there now who previously spent time in New England. So I've tried to take some of what I've learned at both stops and apply it to the writing and make it relevant with some of the players. There aren't a ton that are still here from when I was interning, but there are a few, and of course the quarterback and a couple of others. So, you know, there's some familiar faces, that's for sure.
What years did you serve as an intern here?
Oh, wow, that's a good question. I think it was starting in the summer of 2004.
Yeah,
through summer of 2008, I think that was. So that chunk of time right there.
So you're not as young as you look.
25. How's that?
You and Kevin, kind of right in the same bracket here. What is it with you 20-somethings?
Problem is, I
taking
like
the world
47.
Over. Well, we did talk about that yesterday. Yes, yesterday was his 27th birthday. He looks like he's 47. So
that's all right,
you're still keeping your youthful exuberance about you.
I try.
It's a good job.
One day late. Happy birthday, Kevin.
Appreciate it, Field. Sure. See, he's like the quarterback, like, you know, still looking spry, young.
And you're like the old offensive lineman?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What's the guy for the safety for the Saints, Harper?
Yeah.
Is it Roman Harper?
Roman, like with the gray hair?
All the gray hair and everything. I'm that guy. That's who I am.
You would be if you had hair.
Oh.
Badoom. I know. Thank you very much.
You have that salad up there.
Yeah, I know. I've got it. It's tossed.
He just thinks he can just make fun of all these people.
It's tossed.
Going.
I know.
He puts a little hot sauce, Tabasco, in that thing every morning.
I now understand the dynamics.
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
Very nice.
That's right. You got to bring it strong or just don't bring it at all around here. That's all I'm going to tell you. All right. So what are your impressions at the midway point of the Patriot team being 5-3, number one? Should they be better than their record indicates? And where you feel that sets them up for the second half here?
Well, I think that probably they wish they were at least a game better, and I would say the Patriots, based off their late-game woes and their three losses, should be at least one game better. But I think I would have pegged this team for between 6 and 7 wins in the first half, just taking a look at the schedule and the talent and the opponents and the guys that they were playing. So I think that they probably are just a little bit below or behind the pace that I expected them to be at the halfway point. I think they have some obvious deficiencies they've had to work through with the secondary giving up big plays. But that being said, I kind of find them to be something of a potential sleeping giant with the rest of the schedule ahead of them. And now, whether it was because their bye week came at the, you know, during a certain time when a team like the Denver Broncos has really seemed to be peaking, and all of a sudden people are talking about them as maybe one of the, you know, the class teams in the AFC. And of course, you need to keep Houston and Baltimore in there as well because of their record and the fact that, you know, Baltimore beat the Patriots, of course.
Right.
So Houston, I think we'll learn a lot more about come December 10th, I think it is, or December 3rd when the Patriots, December 10th when the Patriots 10th, and the Texans play on Monday Night Football. So that'll be a big game. But I think the Patriots have an opportunity because of the fact that they've kind of crept under the radar in the past, maybe week or so, have a chance to really you know, turn it on in the second half and put together another good stretch, which they've done each of the past two seasons, going 8-0 in the second half. I don't know if that's necessarily going to happen this year. There are some tough opponents, but it would be no surprise to me to see the Patriots win 6 or 7 games in the second half.
Yeah, I said last week, Field, that I thought this team would go 7-1. I said they have a shot at 8-0 like they did last year because of the way the schedule plays out. You know, we had a phone caller in the last hour mentioned that, you know, hey, even when Houston comes in, this is going to be game 3 of 3 straight on the road for the Texans. And, you know, the numbers are astronomically in favor of the home team in that particular instance. Not that that's going to be a shoe-in by any stretch, because we all know, you shoot yourself in the foot, anything can happen in this game, which is the great equalizer, what we love about, you know, football. But at the same time, you have to take that into consideration, and you have to think the Patriots having the game at home certainly would have a bit of an advantage in that instance.
Yeah, I would think so. The Patriots are traditionally strong at Gillette as it is, even though they've lost a game here earlier in the year against Arizona, probably one they wish they didn't or shouldn't have.
One they should never have lost.
Yes, they should not have lost that game, especially when you see the way that Arizona has sort of evened out since that game.
You clearly can make a case for any one of the three losses. I mean, literally, this team is 3 plays away from being 8-0.
Yes.
I mean, and that's not a stretch. I mean, sometimes you hear that used as an excuse, and there aren't any excuses. We know that. But at the same time, that's a pretty good one if you were going to come up with one.
Absolutely. And you talk about sort of the debate between, are you what your record says you are,
yeah,
like Bill
sure.
Parcells would like to lead you to believe, or are you, you know, probably, do you have to measure up the Patriots 5-3 versus a team like Indianapolis is 5-3? You know, who sounds like the better team? Right now, given the eyeball test, and even though Indianapolis has looked pretty good, I think the Patriots are still the superior team at 5-3. So I think the Patriots are ready to make a big push. And back to your point about, you know, Houston playing that third road game, you know, we'll find out a lot about Houston in these coming weeks. They've got a big one this Sunday night against Chicago, and I think they – I've forgotten who they have the following week, but the Texans are kind of sort of entering the teeth of their schedule. And we'll find out if they're as good as they've been so far or if they're closer to what, you know, maybe someone believed them to be coming into the season.
I think we were all sort of panicking a bit when this team was 3-3. And panic is a little bit different for people who have to cover the team as opposed to being pure fans. I realize there are different degrees of panic here. But I think there was some of that and some of the concern of this team being 3-3. And yet knowing, if you really take a big picture view of the team, you knew that the schedule was going to bounce back around in your favor for the second half, number one. Number two, it was going to get more difficult for the other contending teams in the AFC, and specifically Houston and Baltimore, which are the two teams right now that are in position to be past the Patriots at the end of it all. The Patriots obviously hold a tiebreaker event now, a very important one with Denver. They don't have the one with Baltimore, but Baltimore, with the injuries that they've had, coupled with the tougher schedule that they have down the stretch, you can see where Baltimore may end up struggling, and that may end up working in New England's favor. And if you can beat Houston here, then you have them in a head-to-head if Houston stumbles one more time. So, you know, if you just exercise a little patience, this is the whole proverbial, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon type of scenario.
It totally is, and the Patriots have always lived by that motto, and they've sort of, you know, thrived off of that because they've had stretches in the past where they weren't at their best. But if you look at the entire body of work of a season, they typically find a way to get to the top. And I think that a bye in the first round of the playoffs, the Patriots play up to their ability, is very much in the realm of possibilities.
Is New England as good as the 52-28 win at the end of September over Buffalo, or are the Bills that bad?
I think maybe a little bit of both. I think the Patriots are very good. I think their offense can be as good as any in football, and I think there have been games, looking at the second half of the Buffalo game last week, or 2 weeks ago, I guess, by NFL terms against St. Louis, that was as good as an offensive performance as I think I've seen, maybe besides the Packers taking on the Texans a few weeks back and really throttling them. Those are probably the two best offenses that I've seen when at full strength, but the Bills are really struggling. They've got major issues in the secondary. They picked up a guy off Arizona's practice squad yesterday who might get some legitimate playing time this week. They're really shuffling a lot of different parts, and I think that the secondary could be a major matchup advantage for Tom Brady. So I'd advise any of his fantasy owners to play him absolutely this week. Find a way to trade for
if
him.
If you don't
Tom
already,
yes.
This would be the day to put Brady in your lineup.
Mortgage your lineup in order to get Brady if you want to get him in a trade. But, you know, I think the Buffalo Bills, I think that they're a team that came in with major expectations because of the free agent additions they made and some of the moves they made in the offseason through the draft and stuff. But the big issue has been the depth. You know, can they be anything more? And it's not always about the players 1 to 22. Your starters on offense and defense is what you have from 23 to 53. I think the Bills have shown that beyond the first 22, they're not as strong as a team like the Patriots. So, you know, I think they could be staring at another 6 or 7 or 8-win season, probably at best.
Field Yates, ESPN Boston, joining us here in the playbook. All right, I got to ask you your opinion because it seems to be tough to get opinions on Aqib Talib around these parts, as you well know, trying to talk to these guys, being pretty close-lipped about it. Logan Mankins had a few things to say on Patriots Monday, and then I think someone told him to put a sock in it because nobody's saying anything. What have you been able to glean from the guys, and what are your own thoughts about bringing in Talib from Tampa?
Well, we haven't been able to glean much from the guys. Everybody's kind of said the same thing. If they're saying anything at all, it's that, you know, he's a guy that's, you know, certainly looks like a good player, but not someone that we know a whole lot about. I took some time to go back and watch using the NFL Game Rewind, which is an awesome resource for fans and media members and anybody who likes the game of football to go and watch previous game tape. And I looked at Talib in a couple of matchups against some pretty good NFC East receivers. 1 week, Hakeem Nicks of the Giants. The following week, Dez Bryant of the Cowboys. And 1 week, Nicks had a pretty good game. The following week, Dez Bryant had a pretty average game. So you kind of look at that and you're saying to yourself, well, which one is it with Talib? And I think this guy probably, aside from, I think he comes into the Patriots stadium, and the moment he does, he's probably the most talented player in the Patriots secondary. He's a very good athlete. He's a big, long guy. He kind of has sort of a comparable build to Rozai Dowling. I know a player who some, you know, are still looking for more from, but that's a similarity. I'm not saying they're the same player by any means, but the same build. You know, he's a big guy. He's got some long range. He's also got very good ball skills. I think one thing that I noticed, and I mentioned this in a piece that I did for ESPN Boston, was that a big topic of conversation here around the Patriots secondary members is not being able to get their head back for the ball when it's in the area.
Yeah.
That's something that Talib seems to be able to do pretty well, and that's probably because he's a good athlete. He's a fluid guy. He's got these loose hips that let him to, you know, he can spin and he can really, you know, he can shuffle, turn his body 360 degrees pretty quickly. So I think that's a welcomed addition to the Patriots secondary. You know, the personal stuff, I can't speak to that. None of us really can. We don't know the circumstances. We know that obviously he's dealt with some difficult things and made some poor choices. But We don't know how that relates to him as a football player within the contract of the Patriots. The other thing we don't know yet is how they're going to use him. You know, obviously he'll play cornerback, but they might use him differently than Tampa Bay used him. Tampa Bay often put him on an island and said, listen, you're going up mano a mano against Hakeem Nicks, Dez Bryant, whoever it is, and you're shutting him down. Or if you're not shutting him down, we're going to get exposed. The Patriots may do it differently. They may say, hey, we're going to play a lot more zone coverage. We're going to play you in man coverage with safety top over the help. We don't really know, but what I will say is my impression of this guy is that he automatically makes them a more talented secondary, and he's probably the most talented player the moment he walks in the door.
That's good stuff. All right. We'll let you go take care of your work, because I know you got other things to do for the mothership, but it's greatly appreciated. Good to have you in here for a while. We'll try to do this again.
Sounds good. Appreciate you having me on.
Field Yates, again, ESPN Boston. Read his stuff on ESPNBoston.com. He and Mike Reese and Mike Rodak. Rodak's my boy. Take care of him now, since he's a PC Friar, so don't give him too much crap, all right? We'll take another quick time out here, and then I want to come back and talk to you. So let's get the phones up now. 508-298-0398. That's the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. Web radio at patriots.com, the email address. Find me on Facebook, John.Rook. Twitter, at JRook0722. Who in the sports world has been an influence on your life, positively or negatively? Ready, set, go.
Sullivan Tire and Auto Repair is your Bridgestone Tire headquarters in New England. We have thousands of quality Bridgestone tires in stock at great prices. Save big on such tires as the Bridgestone Dueler HL Alenza, Turanza EL400, the Dueler HT and AT, and the Potenza G019 Grid. And if you're looking for a quality tire to get you through the winter, we have Bridgestone Blizzak tires in stock now. Remember, we are New England's headquarters for top flight maintenance, with over 100 ASC certified master technicians on staff. Utilizing state-of-the-art diagnostic equipment, plus easy online appointments, comfortable waiting areas with free Wi-Fi, free shuttle service, over 65 locations across New England, and the best customer service in the industry. Check out the everyday low prices on Bridgestone tires and make your appointment today at SullivanTire.com. This approval is solely for the purpose of evaluating compliance with Bridgestone's co-op policy. This approval does not in any way constitute, and Bridgestone expressly disclaims, any legal opinion or representation that the ad complies with any applicable laws, rules, or regulations.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then, I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the Red Zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call Star NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epocher. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics tickets to all games, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
This is Rob Gronkowski. I get lots of mail from fans asking me how they can be more like me, Gronk. It's easy.
First, just head down to Dunkin' Donuts and pick up a freshly made bakery sandwich. Second, get a sweet nickname. Third, bench press 225 pounds 28 times. That's it. You're just like me, Gronk. Now hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab a bakery sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'.
Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots LLC.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, Better Banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call better banking. Sovereign Bank, member FDIC.
This is Patriots Playbook with John Rook on Patriots.com radio. Want to get inside the playbook? Call John on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398 or email the show at webradio@patriots.com.
In the playbook for a Wednesday, the Patriots and the Buffalo Bills. Kind of weird that the Patriots will play the Bills twice before they ever face the Miami Dolphins once this year, but that's kind of the quirkiness of the Patriots' schedule this season, and that is the case. Yeah, I kind of miss that. Can't wait to hear that a few million times in a couple of weeks when we finally play those guys, right? You know, but the Dolphins have actually had a pretty successful season thus far this year for them, certainly a lot better than a lot of us, I think, really thought that they'd be capable of, giving them credit for. The Bills less so, and I think that's part of the problem. As we talked with John Murphy, their Buffalo play-by-play voice, and Field Yates from ESPN Boston, a little about this over the course of the last hour or so, but in all honesty, the Bills have been a little disappointed because I think one of the reasons is they've been hurt. Number two, I think that they probably don't have the same, I don't think they have the same, or the quite the personnel that they need in order to operate the kind of schemes, that Dave Wannstedt, who's, you know, back in, as we all know, coaching defense, the pros now, maybe not the same kind of, the personnel they need to run that kind of defense. I don't think he's been, I don't know what the proper way to term this is, but the folks that he has defensively, I don't think are what he's used to having. So because of that, he's sort of had to adapt. The team is going to have to adapt. Whoever is they feel like is going to be around for the long haul is the one that they're going to end up adapting to. I think it'll be curious to see whether or not they're going to give up the ship. But then again, if they beat the Patriots this weekend, consider this now, all right? If they come in here and they beat the Patriots this Sunday, and I'm not saying it won't happen, because I think we, as we all realize, after already all the things that we've seen already this year, it certainly could happen. But if they do, that puts Buffalo at 4-5. That puts the Patriots at 5-4. That's a one-game lead over Buffalo. And now instead of having a commanding 2-0 advantage over the Bills, you're split at 1-1. And so the Bills are only one game out of a potential playoff spot. A win against the Patriots this Sunday changes everything for Buffalo. With a loss, they drop to 3-6, two games back of the Patriots because of the losing of the head-to-head, three games back of the standings. In effect, they're five games behind the Patriots. Not only the three games, 6-3 versus 3-6, but because you've already lost twice to them. So I got to tell you, this is everything. This could be Buffalo's season. This is the kind of game where, you know, the Bills in the locker room could be drawing the line in the sand and say, okay, it's all or nothing right here. We don't look at it from that perspective because of 52-28 back on September the 30th. But when you look at it from the other team's perspective and the other side, you can say, well, now I can understand. Now I begin to get why maybe they would have a little bit of a sense of urgency and why it might be a little bit more important to them, and we're just kind of going through the motions here. This is the kind of thing, when you stop and you think about it, that should grab your attention. And if not your attention, make sure that it grabs the attention of the guys down the hallway here. Because if they're not thinking along these lines, then they could be in for a surprise. Hey, after that Arizona game, I think anything can happen this year. I really do. that Arizona game was as big a shock and surprise, I think, over a given week as I've seen in recent memory for the Patriots for a single game, because there's no way the Patriots should have lost that game. In fact, I mean, we all know it took a shanked field goal for them to still lose it. But you know what? You just don't know. And Buffalo wins. They are right back in business for this season. And with a maligned secondary that's certainly banged up due to injury, with a defensive front that hasn't performed up to the capabilities in which they thought it was going to perform, with a running game that hasn't been consistent because maybe the offensive strategy hasn't been consistent as well. But if they're able to, you know, pound away at you, or if they decide, you know, with Stevie Johnson apparently going to be healthy enough to play this weekend, if they decide, well, you know what, we do need to try that Patriots secondary because there is no Aqib Talib back there just yet. There is no savior. So maybe we do need to go deep on these guys. And maybe they go deep to set up the pound away, pound away, pound away at the middle from Spiller and Jackson. So I think the Bills in that regard match up pretty well with the Patriots. Patriots, however, 10-0 all time against the Bills at Gillette Stadium. 10-0. The 63 wins that the Patriots have over Buffalo all time, that's their highest victory total over any opponent that they've ever faced in their now, what is this, 52-year career, 62-year career. What year is this, 2012? Started in 1960, that would be 52. So there you go. All I'm saying is that they've had more success than anybody else over Buffalo. But then again, the Buffalo Bills did win a game last year, snapping a 15-game losing streak to the Patriots. It can happen. In this day and age of parity and complacency, oh yeah, it can happen. No doubt in my mind that it can happen. All right, a couple of things that we want to check in on. Got this email from Canadian Mike in Florida on our question of the day, which has to do with sports figures who have influenced your life or left a lasting impression, a lasting influence, as Daryl Royal has done for mine as I opened up the show with today. Canadian Mike says, two sports figures that I met have left a lasting influence on my life. Story is kind of similar to Eric's in some ways, because Eric Scalavino at the tail or at the beginning of this hour, if you're just joining us, talked about how former kicker Greg Davis took the time to leave an impression on him. Mike says, as a Pats and Red Sox fan, you were pretty much bred to hate certain teams and their players, i.e. the Jets and the Yankees. Years ago, I used to work at a private golf course in Tampa. On occasion, professional ball players from all sports would play on our course. I was playing as a single. I caught up to a threesome that included Andy Pettit. As a Yankee hater, well, I knew exactly who he was, and I was a little starstruck. They could have easily told me to play through, and I would have obliged. However, Pettit asked me to join the threesome, finish the round. Now, being a Red Sox fan and wearing a Red Sox hat, I was wondering how he would interact. Boy, was I shocked. Not only did he not rag on me about my alliance, but he was a super nice guy. We talked about several things throughout the remainder of the round, sports and non-sports related. Earlier that year, Roger Clemens played on our course, and I briefly met him. Contrary to Pettit, he was a complete douche. I can't say that I'm surprised. Mike, I am so sorry. I don't claim him. Yeah, I know. I mean, I realize he went to Texas, but I don't claim him, and I don't think any Longhorn right now does either. Because I have to admit, you know, I've had very little interaction. He was 3 years behind me in school, and I have not had tremendous interaction with him. And the few interactions I had with him were not all positive, so let's just leave it at that. Mike says, in summary, the two events have taught me that athletes are people, too, regardless of the team they play on. Don't get me wrong, I still hate the Yankees and the Jets, but I am a little more sympathetic toward athletes than I was before. Mike, that's an excellent email. I thank you for sharing your story. That's exactly what I was looking for. And I know that there are many of you that have had instances like this in your life from sports figures that, quite frankly, you know, it's really changed the way that you think. You might not be aware of it. You might not even be aware of it, but it's changed the way that you are, and it's kept you from becoming something else. And I think sports has that kind of an effect on us. You know, many of us use sports as a shield from our problems of everyday life, as a respite from the things that bother us, you know, from the trials and tribulations of what go on in our lives every day, what goes on in our families every day, work, that kind of thing. Sports is a release. Sports is a way to realize that, you know, it doesn't all have to be life and death. You can insert some fun and games in there. But sometimes the real world and the sports world do meet. And it certainly has met in my life to the point where I've been fortunate enough to have been in sports now for going on 33 years as a professional. And I'm one of the luckiest guys I know in that regard. And I know that no matter where you are in life, no matter what it is that you do, you're listening to this program now because sports is also a big part of your life. And so clearly, somehow, somewhere, some way along the line, somebody involved in sports has influenced you and caused you to think the way you do now as opposed to maybe taking another tack in life. Maybe not even be a sports fan altogether. Perish the thought, right? Or certainly not even a football fan. But you must allow for that possibility because you just don't know. You believe in parallel universes? I don't really, but if there is such a thing, you just don't know what might have happened if one small thing in your life did not occur that would cause you to change the way you are and who you are for the remainder of your being on this planet. It's kind of deep, isn't it? Kind of how I feel about it. And, you know, as I opened up with today, that's part of the reason why I wanted to say some of the things that I did about Daryl Royal. Coach Royal, to me, was, the kind of guy that seemed to be as honest as the day was long, genuine, just a good old boy, loved his players as his kids. And the most important thing was it was a man of his word. Integrity meant something to him. And I think he coached that way, and I think he lived that way most of his 88 years. And certainly my experiences with him, he was like that. He always had time for me. When he left coaching, I mentioned earlier that he left, you know, retired in the last game in 1976. That was my senior year of high school. And then I moved into Austin as a freshman in 1977. It was his first year to not be the coach. But a year later, as I became a sports editor of the Daily Texan in Austin, Coach Royal didn't do a lot of interviews. He really preferred the spotlight to be shined on Fred Akers, who replaced him as head coach at the time. And, of course, Coach Akers had his own success that first year. Texas almost won the national championship in 77. But he deferred most of the requests, although I did have a couple of occasions to talk to him. He was gracious. He was nice. I reminded him. I told him the story of when I was, you know, 10, 11 years old, and he patted me on the leg at TCU, and I quoted to him exactly what he said. He said, I meant it that day. I meant it. I was glad you're there to support us. Glad you're here now. What can I do to help you? I was, you know, flabbergasted. Part of me died today when I got news that Coach Royal passed away. And I know that many of you feel the same way when you have friends and relatives certainly pass away, but it's rare that there's a sports figure who you don't know well, but you feel like you know him. Maybe because you agree with who it seems like they are. I'm happy to know that Coach Royal was like I've tried to be. He was the kind of guy that could command respect without having to ask for it. His presence in a room, you wanted to say Mr. without even knowing who he was. Even if he was your best friend, you might want to say Coach or you might say Mr. Royal. You never wanted to call him Daryl by his first name. It was just not respectful for this gentleman. That's the kind of presence he exuded whenever you were in a room with him. And his players were all like that. Even when his players became older men. You know, Coach Royal's 88, so even when his players became older men in their 50s and 60s, they never considered him to be a peer. They never considered him as an equal. He was always coach or mister. His wife, Edith, who, God bless her, she, you know, obviously, as many of you know, if you've had to deal with Alzheimer's within your own families, your own worlds, that's not the easiest thing in the world to do. And Edith has had that, Mrs. Royal has had that problem over the last couple of years, but Mrs. Royal was always referred to as Ms. Royal by the players. Guys who were like their sons, their own children. You always hear stories about how football teams and sports teams in general can be families. And I think that that was the case in a lot of ways back in the late 60s and early 70s at Texas, and a time in which I lived and went through it and experienced this, and it really did help sort of manifest who I am now in my life. I've always said this, largely in jest, but I've always said, cut me, I bleed orange. Just like, you know, you support your school and, you know, Kevin, you know, loves the Boston College Eagles, and cut him, and he probably bleeds maroon gold. So that's great. Yeah, there's that screaming eagle, baby. God, that's obnoxious, isn't it? Just obnoxious. Better, I guess, than having a longhorn steer going.
Hopefully they keep it within 50 points on Saturday when I'm there.
Oh my God! Yeah, no kidding. Well, yeah, we've seen all those 1993 highlights this week, haven't we? Oh my goodness, yes. Wow. That is this weekend. Wow. You're exactly right about that. Notre Dame, that's tough. Although there is nothing better than going into Notre Dame, going into South Bend, Indiana as the visiting team and winning. I've had occasion to do that a couple of years when I was doing Boston College games, and they were actually pretty good, and they whipped up on Notre Dame a couple of times. That's an awesome feeling. Okay. One of the best ever. Brian says this on Facebook. He says, growing up in eastern New Mexico, the 1990s Dallas Cowboys were the Beatles of my youth. I was fortunate enough to have encounters with most of them. The media sweethearts like Emmett Smith were absolute jerks, akin to Lawrence Taylor. However, Michael Irvin, the media villain of the 90s, was a thoughtful and kind person who acted as if no one in the world was more important than the young teen in front of him. Made me realize at an early age that a person's mistakes do not define them. See, that's good stuff, though. That's what we were looking for, this little experiment today, and I'm glad some of you took the time to respond, because I know that there are sports figures who have influenced many of us that are listening right now to this program and who helped define them who they are. Whether, you know, it's, you know, historical or for professional reasons or just because you're a rabid fan now. There's an absolute truth to it, and you may not even realize it until you do some soul searching or you do some introspective searching and you think back on it, and yet, yeah, I remember that time when either you got an autograph or you got snubbed or somebody took you under their wing or they gave you a piece of advice. Or they took you to a game, or a coach took the time to teach you how to do the three-point stance, or whatever it may be. But there had
to
have been.
That's why I don't read the newspaper.
Yeah.
Because it's garbage.
I'm a man. I'm 40, says Mike Gunn.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
One of the all-time best sound bites in the history of sport. Without question. And the YouTube piece on from Mike Gundy on that instance, how long ago was that? Was that 4 or 5 years ago now? I think roughly? Yeah. That's one of the greatest things that I think I've ever heard. So anyway, good stuff today. I thank you for letting me opine about Coach Royal today. Kerry Byrne getting ready to come up with cold hard football facts. I know that this guy has got to have had a significant sports figure in his life who has left a lasting impression to help shape who you are.
Well, you know, I've been very fortunate, John, to have many people influence my life, not just in sports writing and in my other life doing food writing and things like that. But personally, the one that jumps to mind just as an influential figure that impacted my life, and I don't even really know, I've met him in passing, is Doug Flutie.
Mm.
I went to Boston College. I was 14 when he threw the Hail Mary. Wow. I still have the old newspapers. And actually, we're going to have him, I believe, before the Houston game. We're going to have, hopefully, have Doug on the show
here.
To talk about the curse of Doug Flutie and how the fact that Wade Phillips benched him before the 1999 playoffs continues to influence football today, John.
I was one of the idiots in the stands yelling for Flutie.
Like that. So Doug Flutie, and what happened with the Hail Mary and the Hail Flutie pass, as they called it at the time?
Well, you know what? Just being a kid, I was a big football fan, and people forget. If you were here at that time, I don't know where you. If you were in Texas at the time,
I was, but I certainly remember the play
because they called that, and they played that year in Dallas in the Cotton Bowl, right?
Right.
They called that the biggest airlift from Boston since World War II for the January 1, 1985 Cotton Bowl to play the Houston Cougars.
Right.
I had never seen the series so excited for football, and even you could even compare it to when the 2001 Patriots won the Super Bowl, John. It was this town was a college football town for a good 2 years, and it was exciting to see. And I was that age where I was influenced by them, went to Boston College because of it and things like that, part of that Flutie effect at BC.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool stuff. All right, what's on the show today?
We got a little bit of everything. We got to start our Veterans Day salute. Veterans Day is coming up pretty soon. We're going to have Steve Balestrieri, who is a blogger for PatsFans.com, also a U.S. Army Special Forces veteran, John, so we're excited about that. Peter King from Sports Illustrated, a friend of the Cold Hard Football Facts, he'll be on. We're going to talk to one of my favorite chefs, a guy named Chris Coombs, who runs some of the best restaurants in Boston.
Nice.
Also a great tailgating chef. So, and then our friend of the facts, Frankie C. We're going to have a little fun with him. So got a pretty action-packed episode, John.
Sounds like a plan. All right, good stuff. Stay tuned. It's coming up right up. Tomorrow we've got an absolutely jam-packed program ourselves here in the playbook. In addition to Russell Baxter, Kev, you want to film it? You want to remember? You remind my dimly lit bulb on top of my head on who it is that we got coming in tomorrow?
Mark Goggin.
Yes, Mark Goggin from Buffalo News,
he's
right?
He's going to be at 2:30.
Yep.
Then Russell at 3.
Russell at 3.
And hopefully if Russell ever stops talking, you know.
I know.
As we know, he loves to go on.
He does like to go.
We are trying to get, or we will have, Tim Graham, who used to write for ESPN.com and was the AFC East
Tim
cover
Graham.
Guy. And now covers the Buffalo Bills.
And we've had him on many times, absolutely great guy. So we'll get some insight from him from the Buffalo side of things.
So we have the trifecta tomorrow, just like Kerry has today.
Good thing you have Kevin to keep things together, John.
It's
unbelievable. What would you do without him?
We wouldn't be near as successful as we are. That's very true.
If it weren't for me, I'd have no idea who was on his own show tomorrow.
Probably not. All right, so stay tuned for that. Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern time. Be here. Kerry Burns coming up next. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.